Prime members, you can listen to 60 Minutes ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Every year, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints collects $7 billion in contributions from its 17 million members. The church has its own investment firm. But there are questions now about how millions of those dollars have been used by the famously private church.
What about, you know, the idea that secrecy builds mistrust?
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't feel it's being secret. We feel it's being confidential.
What's the difference? What's it like to be in the water with them?
Magical.
Tonight, 60 Minutes is eye to eye with the Whale of Moby Dick legend. But Melville's novel was fiction. Sperm whales are especially maternal. Generations live together while taking care of their calves, and they have the biggest brain in the animal kingdom. And they sleep like this.
You'd be forgiven for double-checking your ticket to make sure you weren't at Madison Square Garden. This is New York's Metropolitan Opera. And in this corner, the maestro, Yannick Nézet-Séguin, only the third music director in the Met's 140-year history. Nézet-Séguin's eyes reach musicians in the pit and vocalists on stage, seemingly all at once. The bounce in his baton consecrates every note.
I'm Leslie Stahl.
I'm Bill Whitaker.
I'm Anderson Cooper.
I'm Sharon Alfonsi.
I'm John Wertheim.
I'm Cecilia Vega.
I'm Scott Pelley. Those stories and more tonight on 60 Minutes.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Every religion has its mysteries. One of the closest guarded secrets of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has been its wealth. Tonight, you will hear for the first time about its remarkable size from a former manager at the church's investment firm. David Nielsen says that during his 9 years managing money at the church firm, the value of its investments ballooned past $100 billion. That would make it the largest treasure held by any religious fund in America. But instead of spending that money to do good, David Nielsen alleges it was used in ways that bent the law and broke his faith.
I thought I was going to work for a charity. I thought that's what my skills were going to do, was help build the charity and do good with things. And the funds were never used for that. It was really a clandestine hedge fund.
A clandestine hedge fund?
Yeah.
How so?
Those funds weren't used the way they were appropriated to be used.
So how were they being used?
Well, once the money went in, it didn't go out.
David Nielsen was a senior portfolio manager for the investment arm of the church called Ensign Peak Advisors. In 2009, Nielsen, who says he was a devout Mormon, was recruited away from a lucrative job on Wall Street to work for the firm, a block from church headquarters in Salt Lake City.
You know this, Wall Street, you spend your skills working to make really rich people a little bit more rich. But there is something different about the prospect of putting your skills to work for something that you think is really going to build the kingdom, that's really going to make a difference.
But Nielsen says he grew troubled by what he saw at Ensign Peak. He says the firm used false records and statements to masquerade as a charity, stockpiling money and misleading church members. Every year, the church collects an estimated $7 billion in contributions from its 17 million members. The church expects members to contribute about 10% of their income, a practice known as tithing.
Explain how the tithe is supposed to be used.
Tithing is what's used to build buildings. It's what's used to pay the light bills. Tithing is what's used to operate some of the church's programs.
Whatever's left over, about $1 billion a year, is put into a reserve fund at Ensign Peak and invested. Because Ensign Peak is registered as a nonprofit, it all grows tax-free. David Nielsen says since it was created in 1997, the reserve fund has swelled beyond $100 billion, twice the size of Harvard's endowment or the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
You could solve big problems with $100 billion.
And is that the thing that bothers you about all this?
I thought we were going to change the world. And we just grew the bank account.
Did any of your former bosses explain how the money was going to be used one day?
The answer was always the second coming. And it's a bit tongue-in-cheek. But deep down, I think a lot of the employees really did believe that.
Publicly, church leaders called it a rainy day fund. But in 2013, Nielsen says one of his bosses shared this document at a meeting that showed $1.4 billion from the fund went to a mall being built on land owned by the church. And $600 million was used to prop up a for-profit church-owned insurance company called Beneficial Life.
Look, I'm not an expert on charities, but I've been around the block enough to know that charitable organizations can't bail out for-profit businesses and maintain their charitable status.
And so when they gave this money to bail out a for-profit venture, what was your reaction?
What are we doing? Like, how is this okay?
David Nielsen says he hit his breaking point in 2018 after a website called Mormon Leaks linked church members to companies that existed only on paper. Those shell companies held billions of dollars in stocks and bonds. What nobody knew outside church leadership was those assets were actually controlled by Ensign Peak. Nielsen says the firm called an emergency meeting.
What was the explanation?
These entities were to hide the assets from the members. The chief investment officer said that if we were to change and start reporting these securities in our own name, it would bring undue attention to the firm, and that that attention would be potentially damaging. And after the meeting, I went and confronted him. What do you mean, potentially damaging? And he said, Dave, we're going to lose our tax-exempt status. I knew in that moment that I was in the wrong place.
He resigned in 2019 and filed a 74-page whistleblower complaint with the Internal Revenue Service, alleging that Ensign Peak violated its tax-exempt status by moving money to for-profit businesses.
It's not just incorrect, it's flat-out wrong.
Christopher Waddell says David Nielsen didn't have a full picture of Ensign Peak. Waddell is one of three church bishops who oversees finances.
As a Christian church, we believe that someday Jesus Christ will return. But that's not why we have those resources. It's for the continuing operation and for the future.
David Nielsen alleged that Ensign Peak violated its tax-exempt status by directing money to church businesses. How would you characterize how that money was used?
The church actually owned Beneficial Life. And fortunately, the church had the resources to bail out Beneficial Life during the financial crisis, 2008, 2009.
In the mall?
The mall was not a bailout. The mall was an investment.
And you are receiving returns on that
absolutely.
Investment.
Yeah, it was an investment.
Waddell says the insurance company has paid back most of the bailout money, but the church would not disclose the details of that deal or the mall investment. Unlike other nonprofits, religious organizations don't have to fully disclose all financial information to the IRS.
What is the value right now of Ensign Peak's assets?
Yeah, that's something I can't share with you right now. I know there have been reports on approximates and that kind of thing, and that's as far as we can go right
it's
now.
It's been estimated at $150 billion. Does that sound correct?
That's an estimate that some have made.
Are we in the ballpark or no?
We have significant resources.
Give us a sense of what percentage is going out the door mm-hmm. of the money under management. Mm-hmm.
To be honest, we've never looked at it as a percentage. We looked at it based on needs to make sure that we're comfortable with how many years' worth we have in case of financial difficulties, in case of financial crisis, to make sure that we can continue church operations. We just want to make sure that is sufficient.
David Nielsen says he did not intend for his complaint to the IRS to become public, but in 2019, his brother shared it with the Washington Post. Nielsen, who in his free time races motorcycles, says he was shunned by some of his friends and neighbors in Salt Lake City. It wasn't until 2021, 2 years later, that David Nielsen heard from investigators, not from the IRS, but the Securities and Exchange Commission, which launched its own probe into Ensign Peak after that website story linked the church to shell companies.
What information did you give to the SEC?
Everything. I helped them see the big picture.
To protect market fairness and transparency, any firm with more than $100 million in securities must file accurate reports on its holdings with the SEC. But in February, the SEC announced the Church of Latter-day Saints and Ensign Peak failed to do that. SEC investigators found the church went to great lengths to hide $32 billion in securities over nearly 20 years. It created 13 shell companies that were assigned a local phone number that would go directly to voicemail in case regulators checked in.
Here they had these back office accountants who had never bought a bond or sold stock a day in their life, signing signatory pages for a portfolio that didn't exist.
The SEC fined the church and Ensign Peak a total of $5 million. Bishop Christopher Waddell told us it was the church's lawyers who advised them to create the shell companies.
What about, you know, the idea that secrecy builds mistrust?
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't feel it's being secret. We feel it's being confidential.
What's the difference?
The difference is, I guess it's a point of view. It's confidential in order to maintain the focus on what our purpose is and what the mission of the church is, rather than the church has X amount of money.
But don't you agree this would be a non-issue if there was more transparency?
No, because then everyone would be telling us what they wanted us to do with the money.
Last year, the church says it spent over $1 billion on humanitarian aid, including food production.
In any given month, you may have an average of 9 transfers that going from Ensign Peak back to the church to fund all church operations, all humanitarian work, education work, all the work of the church they fund.
Money's going in and out of the cash accounts all the time. But Ensign Peak's funds were never used for any charitable purpose. It's to my knowledge, the whole time I was there. So there's a bit of a distinction here that's important.
Explain that to me.
Well, it's the difference between your checking account and maybe your retirement account. They're used for different purposes, and you don't get to pretend that one is affecting the other.
The fundamental claim to me is that Ensign Peak brings money in, and it's the Hotel California. It never comes out.
Phil Hackney worked in the office of chief counsel of the IRS and teaches tax law. He concedes it's complex, and the case falls into a gray area.
The church would say, we give millions of dollars out every year in humanitarian work. How much is enough by the standards of the IRS?
We know within private foundations, it's 5% of assets. There's no clarity when it comes to public charities, and certainly not with churches. But I would expect to see something like 2, 3% of assets being spent out to justify that status.
But how do you know if they're spending 2 or 3% of assets if we don't know what the assets are?
We have to rely on them behaving well.
They said they bailed out this insurance company. That's the words they used. Is that a problem?
It is a problem, in my opinion, if they have moved money from the nonprofit to a for-profit.
So how likely do you think it would be that the IRS would ever investigate this?
Slim. The political risk is so great that it comes with real danger. At the same time, there's a real risk to the rule of law if the IRS doesn't come in and enforce those rules.
David Nielsen says honesty is a tenet of the faith. He wants Ensign Peak advisors to pay the taxes he says it owes on the $100 billion fortune built from tithing. If the IRS decides Nielsen is right, he could be rewarded with up to 30% of what's collected. The IRS does not comment on whistleblower complaints.
Why are you speaking now?
It's time, Sharon. We gave the IRS and the SEC all the professional courtesy. This is just too important to fall through the cracks.
It's possible that you were dead wrong.
No. I know what I saw. I know what I know.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than just a car or a house. It's the four wheels that get you where you're going and the four walls that welcome you home. When you combine auto and home insurance with Amica, we'll help protect it all. And the more you cover, the more you can save. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
In December, nearly every member country of the United Nations pledged to protect at least 30% of the world's land and sea by 2030 to reverse the damage done by humans and protect vulnerable species. One of the animals at risk is also one of the largest in the ocean and among the least understood. sperm whales are not the predators of Moby Dick legend. They have brains six times larger than ours and spend most of their lives in the darkest depths of the ocean. It is difficult to describe their size without comparing them to a school bus. Last month, we traveled with National Geographic explorer Enrique Sala to the Caribbean island of Dominica, where he's proposing protections for the hundreds of sperm whales living there. But first, we had to find them.
You guys ready?
Go, go, go!
Go, go!
Go, guys, go!
Look in the water, coming straight to you, yeah!
Most of Enrique Sala's dives don't start like a fire drill, even though he has spent thousands of hours underwater as an explorer.
Look down!
At the back of you, look!
This way!
This way!
We came face to face with a pod of whales, but these are not the whales we traveled all this way to see. They are pygmy killer whales, known to threaten sperm whales. And because they are here, the sperm whales are not. These killer whales can grow up to 8.5 feet in size. Sala told us seeing them up close almost never happens.
You've never been able to get into the water with one of these. They're that elusive.
They are very elusive.
Why is that? Why do you not see them?
They are very smart. They hunt like wolves. They hunt in groups. And they don't care about interacting with humans. They are after the prey.
We were off the coast of Dominica, a country in the Eastern Caribbean. Residents call it Nature Island. Those rainforest-covered volcanic peaks drop thousands of feet down to the seafloor below, which is why hundreds of sperm whales live in these waters. They are one of the deepest diving mammals on the planet. They are mostly females here, families made up of grandmothers, mothers, and daughters who stay together for life, nursing and raising their young. When Enrique Sala was here in December, his National Geographic team filmed this. It is a pod of sleeping female sperm whales, vertical giants up to 40 feet long, suspended near the surface. Their nap lasts only about 15 minutes until the whales are ready to dive again in what can be an hour-long journey for squid thousands of feet down. Even to researchers, why they sleep like this is one of the great mysteries.
What's it like to be in the water with them?
Magical. We have in our minds the legend of Moby Dick, these nasty, aggressive animals. But you jump in the water and they are so docile and gentle. They have never attacked humans and they are so curious, especially the babies. So it's one of the most amazing wildlife encounters that one can have on the planet.
Your official title is Explorer in Residence. Not bad.
It's an oxymoron. Explorers are not supposed to be.
True. You're not supposed to be sitting in one place. What does that mean to be an explorer in the year 2023?
Very different from what an explorer of the 19th century was. I can dedicate my life and work with an amazing team of scientists, policy experts, filmmakers, storytellers, to work with local communities, governments, indigenous peoples, to assess the health of ocean places and help to protect them.
He grew up north of Barcelona, Spain, near the coast. His first dive was in a marine reserve.
It drove everything that I have done afterwards. If we give the ocean space, it can heal itself.
Sala moved to California, where he was a professor of marine ecology for 7 years at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography.
You have had a long career in academia at a top university, and you tried that and decided, not for me, you walked away.
I walked away because my job was to study the impacts of humans in the ocean, the impacts of fishing and global warming. And one day I realized that all I was doing was writing the obituary of the ocean.
Writing the obituary of the ocean?
Yeah, I felt like the doctor who's telling you how you're going to die with excruciating detail, but not offering a cure.
Have you found that cure?
There is one solution that is proven. It's a success story everywhere in the world, which is marine reserves or marine protected areas, areas where damaging activities are banned and marine life can come back.
He founded the Pristine Seas Project in 2008. It combines sea exploration, scientific research, and public policy, and has worked with 17 countries to turn these large swaths of the ocean into marine protected areas. In Dominica, scientists estimate the sperm whale population declines by 3% each year. Sala says a preserve would protect them from their greatest threats. Not those pygmy killer whales we saw, or whaling, which has been banned for decades,
but plastic trash, ocean noise pollution, and ship strikes.
If they continue with the status quo here, what happens?
If nothing is done, the population will probably continue declining. So reducing those threats, hopefully, will allow the sperm whale population to rebound. And the more whales there are, the more benefits Dominica and the local communities will obtain.
Hurricane Maria devastated those communities in 2017. Today, the island is continuing to rebuild and prepare for the future. Francine Barron heads the agency in charge of that effort.
What was it about Hurricane Maria that made the leaders of this country say, we have to do something, we really have to act?
We suffered the equivalent of 226% loss of GDP. So we could see the trend, and we realized that we needed to become much more resilient.
When Enrique Sala came to you with this idea of creating a sanctuary for these whales, what was his pitch to you?
We see whale watching as an important part of our tourism product, and it's something that needs to be protected. And the idea of creating greater protection for the whales is something that Dominica is very open to. And we were very pleased with the suggestion that Enric made to creating a recognized sanctuary for the whales.
Enrique Sala compares it to a model that has worked in Rwanda, where protecting mountain gorillas helped bring tourism dollars to the local economy.
You gonna find us some whales?
Sure.
All right.
Captain Kurt Benoit was born and raised in Dominica and has been in the whale tourism business for more than two decades. We set out on his 38-foot Lady Rose from a small fishing village on the west coast. Our government permit to swim with the whales was good for 6 days. Captain Benoit uses a homemade device that picks up the distinct clicking of sperm whales as far as 11 miles away.
We got whales in the south.
Every 3 miles, we check to see if we were getting closer.
Let's come to Papa. Daddy's here.
Tell me about this really high-tech device you've got here.
You have an underwater microphone which picks up sound from 360. So what I did, I took a salad bowl with neoprene. So the hydrophone is kind of hidden. So as it goes out, it actually brings you straight to wherever you hear the sound.
So this is a salad bowl from your house?
Yes.
What do the whales sound like?
It's like a horse is galloping on a hard surface. So if you hear several of them, that means there's a lot of whales there.
Let's keep on going, man. I'm going to find these guys.
All right.
On the second day, a water spout.
See it? It's right here. Look, guys. See him? You can see its top. Look at him. Oh, my gosh.
No! Swimmers in the water.
Males here live with their families until their teen years. Then they roam mostly alone, swimming thousands of miles away. Caribbean male sperm whales have been found as far away as Norway, returning here only to mate.
Our cameraman got lucky enough or unlucky enough to have the whale poop on him.
So the whales go down, they hunt squid, they come back to the surface, they breathe, they rest, and they poop. And that poop is full of nutrients, which fertilizes the shallow waters.
So a good thing, I guess.
It's a good thing.
Come on, people, we're looking for spouts.
But our luck didn't last.
Okay, guys, nothing is yet.
We spent the next day searching for sperm whales, and the next.
Nothing at all?
Nothing at all.
And the next. Not a single click.
You guys, it's pretty quiet.
And then, in the last hour of the last day of our trip.
Yeah, lots of animals in the area, guys. Woo! They're coming back. But I'm getting songs 360. So that means the whales, we are above them. We're right there. Yes, she blows! Yes, she blows! Yes, she blows! Yes, she blows! Yes, she blows!
Go, go, go! Go! And stay there, it's coming to you!
Cecilia!
It's coming to you!
Coming to you!
We jumped in the water and a young female swam right to us. She came within feet. At first, her size was terrifying. She made a sound like a creaking door hinge. It's one of the ways whales communicate and socialize. With eyes on the side of her head, she stared right at us. she had squid in her mouth, left over from lunch thousands of feet below. She stayed and rolled around, and her jaw was wide open. She was using echolocation, bouncing those clicks off of us, trying to figure out what we were.
You could hear the clicking. You could hear her. Once you were really close to her, you could hear that so
very loudly. I could feel it in my bones.
Mm-hmm. You grabbed my hand. You could tell I was nervous.
I was excited too.
You were?
They are huge. You have to respect them.
You have to respect them. There is a sense of awe that comes with being in there. She was looking right at us.
And she left us a souvenir.
Piece of squid.
Sperm whales live in...
Shane Giro is another National Geographic explorer. He started the Dominica Sperm Whale Project, and over the past 18 years, he's identified more than 35 families.
Did you recognize the whale that we saw?
The animal you met belongs to the EC2 clan, the other clan of whales that we've known exists in the Caribbean, but we haven't seen all that much. And those groups identify themselves by making specific patterns of clicks called codas. It's a part of who they are, where their grandmother grew up. And so it really ties the animals and the place together.
What does the coda of the EC2 sound like?
They make the 5R3 coda, and it sounds like this. 5 slow clicks. And she came up to you and made this 5R3 coda, saying, I am from the EC2 clan, are you?
She was rolling around and she kept coming back. But is that me assigning human characteristics to a whale, or is she actually a playful animal?
These are the animals that are holding the largest brain to ever exist, maybe in the universe. And they use that for complicated thinking and behavior. Absolutely, this was an animal that was playful. And that curiosity of the animal actively coming towards you just shows that this is an animal that's investigating something in its world.
And most people don't know.
Back on the dock,
there is a treasure here.
Enrique Sala says it's that world he's trying to protect.
Being in the water with sperm whales is a magical experience. There's something spiritual there. This is more than science and data. Sense of awe and wonder that is unavoidable when you are in the water with these gentle giants.
We all have busy lives these days, and we don't want to waste a day recovering after a night out. That's why ZBiotics is the answer we've all been looking for. Their probiotic was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. This is a proactive solution that wards off feeling miserable the next day instead of a reactive approach like drinking electrolytes or eating greasy food. Enhance your mornings with ZBiotics. Go to ZBiotics.com/CBS to get 15% off your first order when you use code CBS at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/CBS and use the code CBS at checkout for 15% off. Thank you, ZBiotics, for sponsoring this episode and our good times.
Hello, snack lovers. Curb your cravings with My Mochi ice cream. Imagine a scoop of rich, creamy, premium ice cream in your favorite flavor. Now imagine that scoop wrapped up in the sweetest, softest dough known to mankind. That's My Mochi ice cream. Sweet, chewy, cool, and creamy, all in one bite. It's quite possibly the most joyfully chill sensation you've ever had in your life. My Mochi ice cream comes in tons of fabulous flavors, like strawberry, mango, cookies and cream, and double chocolate. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned mochis that are about 80 calories each, and it's also gluten-free. You can find My Mochi at Target or visit MyMochi.com to find a grocery store near you. That's MyMochi.com. Discover the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream today.
You
Yannick Nézet-Séguin is a conductor operating at triple tempo, at once the director of three major orchestras in Philadelphia, in his hometown of Montreal, and at the Metropolitan Opera in New York, which has pinned on him the hopes for rebounding from financial crisis and the bold revamping of its artistic mission. Not that you'll catch Nézet-Séguin sweating it. At 48, he's obliterating the stereotype of the strict, unapproachable maestro, joyfully keeping his musicians in time, his hair bleached platinum blonde, and a smile all but welded to his face. Known as much for his versatility as his virtuosity, Nézet-Séguin is reimagining the role of the modern orchestra and its place in the soundtrack of the modern city. You'd be forgiven for double-checking your ticket to make sure you weren't at Madison Square Garden. This is New York's Metropolitan Opera. And in this corner, the maestro, Yannick Nézet-Séguin, only the third music director in the Met's 140-year history. He's conducting a jazz-infused opera about a real-life boxing champion of the 1960s and 70s. All this is a radical key change from the standard Met lineup of Puccini and Verdi and Wagner. Nézet-Séguin's eyes reach musicians in the pit and vocalists on stage, seemingly all at once. The bounce in his baton consecrates every note.
It's the cathartic moment where, oh my God, this is so amazing, this is so impressive, this is so intense, this is so emotional. And this cathartic experience, we feel transformed as a different person before and after listening to these pieces.
There seems to be something sacred about your making music. Am I overstating that?
No, you're not. I try never to take myself too seriously, but music has to be taken seriously.
A pianist by training who's conducted the great philharmonics of Europe, Nézet-Séguin brings his sensibility to bear up and down the Eastern Seaboard. In Philadelphia, he is the current custodian of what's been a world-renowned orchestra for more than a century. We visited in February as the city celebrated the contract extension through 2030 of a maestro known to all by his first name.
Yannick!
That morning, Yannick and his musicians made the pilgrimage up the famed Rocky Steps, clad in Eagles gear. He sees the orchestra, not unlike a sports team, as an instrument of cohesion in the community.
Hey! Hi, everyone! Hi!
In the afternoon, Nézet-Séguin stopped by Philly's premier performing arts high school to guest conduct the students.
I think if we were to agree to bite even more in every note, like ta 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 ta. That's it. That's what I'm talking about.
450 miles due north, back home in Montreal.
À cause du décrescendo. Yeah.
They speak his language in more ways than one. He has a lifetime contract with the Orchestre Metropolitain. Nézet-Séguin has led these musicians for more than 20 years. That's his husband, Pierre Tourville, on viola. The depth of his connection here produces hypnotic sound. Listen to this, a rehearsal of Sibelius's Fifth Symphony. Some weeks, Yannick leads performances in all three cities. Just last Saturday, he conducted a matinee in New York and the evening program in Philly. Then again, what is a conductor if not someone able to synchronize?
I can't deny that it's a very demanding schedule, and even the word schedule, should I ever retire, I want to ban that word from my life.
Do you have a favorite child among the three orchestras you conduct?
You cannot ask me this.
Yet one child in particular, and isn't this always the case, demands extra attention and TLC.
Can we have more importance in the third bar team? Pam, 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 pam.
At the Met, the country's largest performing arts institution, we watched him wrangle 250 musicians and singers for a production of Wagner's Lohengrin, a stalwart opera that gave us the bridal chorus. Inese Sagaz's interpretations do right by the masters.
What I want is to respect what Wagner wrote in the score. So it's very poetic and magical. What's really individual is me being completely at the service of the composer.
Yannick took over the podium here in 2018, after his predecessor was fired for allegations of sexual misconduct. Facing weak ticket sales and perpetually strapped for cash, the Met has had a hard time rebounding from COVID and has dipped into its endowment to cover around 10% of its $300 million operating budget.
Maestro to the pit, please.
They've tried courting a younger, more diverse crowd here before, but Inese Sagaz is doing it prestissimo, speeding up the tempo of change. He's betting that new composers and contemporary operas, some adapted from best-selling books and Hollywood hits, will bring in a wider audience and shore up the bottom line. And early results suggest he's right. A recent premiere of the opera Fire Shut Up in My Bones, based on a memoir by journalist Charles Blow and composed by jazz legend Terence Blanchard, sold out and outsold Verdi's classic Rigoletto here that season. What's more, half the seats were filled by first-time Met-goers.
It's great. Such a success. And yet I'm thinking that means that all of these people never felt compelled or, dare I say, welcome to come here. And that is my mission.
First-timers were 50%. You saw that as both a triumph, but also sounds like an indictment.
Mostly it's a tremendous encouragement to continue in that vein.
The Met will put on 17 new and recent works over the next five seasons. This at a place that once went near decades without staging a new opera. This spring brought Champion, another Terence Blanchard composition based on the complicated life of Emil Griffith, a bisexual prize fighter.
What can't you write an opera about?
Nothing.
How do you thread that needle between experimenting and bringing in new audiences, but also not upsetting the traditionalists?
The truth is, I'm not necessarily concerned about not upsetting traditionalists. I think people who love our art form are still going to love it because we're still going to play some Puccini and Verdi. To me, it's never about not upsetting. And if some people are upset, well, too bad. They just don't have to come to everything we do.
And that's about as prickly as you'll hear him get. Beyond Yannick's musicianship, his real hallmark might be his light touch.
Okay, let's do it one more time.
Take this rehearsal for Champion, the first time the orchestra, rhythm section, and singers played the piece together, but also that rare collaboration between a conductor and a living composer.
He gets it.
Terence Blanchard, a seven-time Grammy winner, is the first black composer in the Met's history.
He gets the story. He gets the whole notion of bringing these different styles of music together. One of the rehearsals with the orchestra, he said, listen, don't follow me, listen to the drums. Most conductors don't do that.
I'm there for you. Okay, cool.
We saw firsthand Yannick's responsiveness when soprano LaTanya Moore asked him to slow things down.
Can we go in here slower? I just want to really get everything out.
Yeah, so right from the bass.
Is there a worry, though, that your authority might be undercut by all these good vibes?
I think it's the old concept of authority, which is because I say so and because I can fire you, I'm going to tell you what to do. That's not working anymore. And I will go even further, even the masters of the past. Toscanini, for example. Fantastic musician. Of course, I respect a lot of this. But you can hear when some recordings with Toscanini, especially with singers, you could hear the fear in their voice. And to me, that's not expressive.
You can discern that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm sure you could. Like they're trembling because they fear, because already to open your mouth on the stage is already nerve-wracking. If you have a conductor who's waiting for you to fail, it's going to be even more nerve-wracking. The music doesn't win. The music wins when everybody feels free to express who they are.
Yannick found that freedom for himself as early as grade school. Here he is, leading an imaginary orchestra in front of classmates. He studied at the conservatory in Montreal, a music town with a church on every corner. He led the church choir in his teens and trained his ear in less formal ways, too.
I would go to a record store and buy CDs and discover repertoire after repertoire, every symphony by Brahms, every symphony by Beethoven, by Bruckner, by Mahler. I wanted then to hear every version and buy every version of every symphony. And I'm not shy to say that it's shaped a lot of who I am as a musician, because eventually I became a collection of like 12,000 CDs.
Last winter, we visited his parents at Yannick's childhood home, the kind of folks who keep every clipping.
Yannick told us when he was a boy, he collected thousands and thousands, maybe 10,000 CDs.
Oh, yeah, more than that.
He wasn't exaggerating.
No, not at all.
Where did you put them?
He made the shelves for me.
And it was his mom who managed Yannick's schedule throughout his 30s, as he worked the international circuit, London, Vienna, Rotterdam, guest conducting 100 orchestras. He made his Met debut in 2009. Persistence paying off. And if today he's living the dream, he's also conscious to live his life. He and Pierre go on the road together. We met them at a spot in Old Montreal where they had celebrated their wedding. They make a point of going out after every performance.
Friends, family, members of the orchestra,
colleagues,
some people together to eat well and drink a little.
Of all the musical moments in the couple's history, we were surprised when Yannick highlighted this one. The time Pierre and Celine Dion serenaded him on a popular Quebec talk show, a kind of musical This Is Your Life.
Of course, it's one of the most moving moments of my life.
Not everybody can say that they've sung a duet with Celine Dion.
A duet with Celine Dion.
Bocelli and Barbara Streisand. Yeah, and
Pierre.
Pavarotti.
And Pierre.
Wow.
Maybe it's a hard turn from Celine to the Met for most conductors. Not so for Yannick Naizet-Séguin. Yes, he takes music seriously, but resists being too precious about it.
You have to trust the acoustics.
He's too busy smudging boundaries that have long kept some audiences away from classical music and opera.
I would love that when I finish my time on Earth, that no one ever says again, oh, classical music, it's not for me. It's for the educated. It's for the rich. It's for the white. Whatever it is. You know, I want everyone to feel, oh, yeah, I could like it, some of it. I don't like Mozart, but I like Blanchard. Fine. But at least you feel that you could go there because there would be something for you.
What would Puccini and Verdi and Wagner make of all this? One suspects they would join in the applause. They, after all, were once musical boundary pushers, too.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Tonight's story about the sperm whales of Dominica recalls another maritime adventure. In the fall of 2019, we reported on the sometimes uncomfortable comeback of great white sharks along the Atlantic coast. Bill Whitaker went to Cape Cod with the Massachusetts Department of Marine Fisheries and to Nova Scotia with the research organization OSearch to see the giant predators up close as they are tagged and equipped with satellite tracking transmitters. Transmitters attached, this 12-foot shark, now named Sydney, was back in the water and its tracker showed heading south for the Carolinas and Florida. Although Sydney's signal has been lost, OSearch reports 87 other sharks it tagged are beginning to swim north again for the summer. I'm Sharon Alfonsi. We'll be back next week with another edition of 60 Minutes.
If you like 60 Minutes, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
I'm CBS News correspondent Major Garrett, host of the podcast Agent of Betrayal, The Double Life of Robert Hansen. During the Cold War, FBI agent Robert Hansen traded classified secrets to the Kremlin in exchange for cash and jewels. In the podcast, you'll hear from Hansen's closest friends, family members, victims, and colleagues for the most comprehensive telling of who Robert Hansen really was. Binge the entire series now. Agent of Betrayal, The Double Life of Robert Hansen is available on the Wondery app, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every episode of 60 Minutes, America's most watched news magazine show, as a podcast. Hear in-depth investigations across politics, news, and entertainment on your schedule. Listen to 60 Minutes ad-free on Wondery Plus.